powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
You know that saying, it gets better? Well, in this case, it gets worse.
It gets worse.
Curtis, do you have the forecast? Actually, Seattle Sports forecast?
Seattle Sports forecast. A lot of anger right now. Whoa. No one's happy. Russell Wilson frustrated with the Seahawks. Seahawks frustrated with Russell Wilson. Mariners frustrated with their players. Players feeling frustrated right back. Fans frustrated at the Seahawks and the Mariners and Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll. It's all bad, Stacy.
Now, is anyone having a good time?
Hey, LJ Collier said he thinks he can be a Pro Bowler.
That's good
Should
news.
We lead off with that?
We're not going to lead off with that. We are going to get to that, though. Someone in Seattle sports is having a great day. Congratulations, LJ Collier.
Shout out. He's having
a great day. Everyone else, though, real upset. Now, normally I like to lean toward positivity, so I'm going to try to have fun with most of it. But I got to be honest, you guys, some of this is also making me pretty angry. So let's go ahead and start right here. In an interview with USA Today's Bob Nightingale, Jared Kelnick said that he believes he's being punished for refusing to sign a deal with the Mariners that was offered to him 14 months ago. Now, obviously, we collectively, the public, found out about this when Kevin Mather, former president and CEO of the Seattle Mariners, decided to tell, of all people, the Bellevue Rotary Club that this was something that happened. So, unfortunately for Jerry DePoto and Scott Service, they now have to kind of clean up this mess that's left behind with potentially some service time arguments that are going to come out with that. We don't know if there's going to be any grievances filed. We don't know what kind of consequences are coming from this. What we do know is that Jared Kelnick, in an article that was published this morning, said that he certainly believes that service time clock is being manipulated by the Seattle Mariners. So,
oh boy.
Jake, I hope you're having a good day, because for Mariners fans, Seahawks fans, everyone except for LJ Collier, it's a really tough Tuesday.
I'm having a good day now. I've had human interaction. Brooke and the kids went out of town to go see her sister, and I'm at home and I've got nothing to do. So
how long until you start talking to a volleyball you pretend is Brooke?
Pretty close. I mean, I got home and around 5 o'clock, I really did not know what to do with myself. I was walking around. It was bad. It was really, really bad. The bachelor life is not for me. I'll just say that. But I am glad to be here with all of you and talking about this, and also looking at Kelnick's seizing the moment is what I would like to call this. He has got everybody on his side in terms of the local fan base, the national fan base. You've got the MLBPA that's looking at this situation right now and they're going to be championing this case as priority number one, holding into labor disputes. I mean, there's a whole lot of people that are going to be paying attention to what happens with Jared Kelnick and the Mariners. And I believe that there is a couple key distinctions in this article that need to be cleared up. That when you look at what happens with Jared Kelnick and service time manipulation, yes, he was offered a contract, much like Evan White, and I think a little bit more than Evan White, as it was said, but that he would have been with the big league club last year during the 60-game season had he had signed that contract like Evan White. I am not really bothered by the fact that he was not with the team this last season. In 2020, he points to, we were close to the playoffs, all that. You weren't designed to be there. The Mariners were not trying to win and get to the playoffs at that point and at that stage. So I don't really have an issue with it. Now, when it comes to this year, though, in 2021, I have always been a proponent from day one that if Jared Kelnick is ready and you believe that he is ready and you believe fully that this guy is going to be a superstar, which last time I checked is pretty much the consensus within that organization, then I believe it would be best suited for the team to let this kid go and allow him to be with the big league club from the get-go. And you, I think that Jerry DePoto tried to put out, you know, here in cut number
three.
He tried to put out some fires and say, look, this has nothing to do with manipulation. This has everything to do with development.
From the way we communicate with our players, we have talked about Jared Kelnick in this light for some time. And I'm not sure how you could construe a service time manipulation with a 21-year-old player who's played 20 games of above A ball and who has not yet achieved 800 plate appearances as a professional player. It's a, you know, that would be an unprecedented run to the big league by a high school draftee. That hasn't happened in three decades.
So it would all be a legitimate argument for Jerry DePoto. He'd have a leg to stand on. Just that comment alone. If you looked at everything else and just looked at that, I believe that he has a leg to stand on in saying that this has nothing to do about service time manipulation. This has everything to do with development. The problem is that Evan White is playing in the big leagues, and he is not, and I'm a huge fan of Evan White. He's not as talented or highly regarded within this organization and across baseball as Jared Kelnick is. And so if Evan White is up and Jared Kelnick is not, hey, Curtis, could you tell me maybe what might be the difference there? Because it's kind of, I get a little confused sometimes.
Evan White signed that contract last year.
Oh, so was it about development for Evan White, or was it about the contract? Interesting. So I don't think this has anything to do with the fact that it's development. I believe it has more to do with service time manipulation. And that's okay. But don't try and tell us one thing when it's really another. And I believe Jared Kelnick has a lot of momentum on his side. And when it comes to potentially filing a grievance, I think he's got a great case for himself. But overall, I believe that Jared Kelnick is in a position right now where if he is ready and he shows you he's ready in spring training, I don't think that it is in the best interest of this franchise to hold him back. I really, truly believe that.
I think that you're going to have some fans saying, what's the big deal? I mean, I don't mean to sound like insulting when I say this. I'm from here, but it's the Seattle Mariners have not had success. Like, is it really going to be the end of the world? You're not going to like potentially lose out on a playoff shot if you bring someone up early. Now, Curtis, you did, though, look at a very recent case of pretty clear service time manipulation with Chris Bryant. We have both of their slash lines. What's the biggest difference you notice between Jared Kelnick and Chris Bryant?
The biggest difference, so the biggest similarity is the at-bats. They have the exact same at-bat total.
Facundo, 663 and 664, respectively.
The biggest difference is that Chris Bryant had about double the production that Jared Kelnick has had in the minor leagues. And Kelnick's put up good numbers. He has put up really solid numbers. It's just that Bryant's were eye-popping. They were jarring how crazy high they were.
325, 424, 661 with 56 home runs. Made his debut when he was 23. Jared Kelnick, 21 years old, correct? So the thing that makes it tricky is Kevin Mather's comments, because Jerry DePoto has a very fair point in saying you just haven't had enough time there. That would be a pretty unprecedented run to the big leagues if you were to be brought up, say, last season in 2020. Without Mather's comments, it would have been really hard for anyone to file a grievance against DePoto with that kind of, you know, lack of plate appearances. And if someone were to point at Chris Bryant and say, well, what about this? Well, you could also say, look, same number of plate appearances. Chris Bryant just had more production. Here's where it gets tricky, though, Jake. What happens if Jared Kelnick is lights out in training camp, or excuse me, in spring training? You know what I mean? Like right now, you can point to Chris Bryant's numbers and you can say, yeah, he had the same number of at-bats, but he was out of this world with his production. What happens if Jared Kelnick does that?
Like I said, I don't believe you have a choice. I think at that point it becomes very obvious if you hold him back for the quote-unquote sake of development, it's very clear what you're doing. It's service time manipulation. That's okay. In my opinion, I don't have a problem with it from an organizational standpoint. I don't condemn the Mariners if they want to do that. It's smart. It's the rules. Do I like it? No. But that's what's available to you, right? The league and MLBPA, that was the agreement that they had. And if you don't like it, then guess what? This next union dispute, you get to have the opportunity to try and fix that. But that's the way baseball is set up right now. Now, when you look at what I think Jared Kelnick is ready for, I think he's ready for this moment. He's got to go prove it in spring training, but I think he's ready for it, and I think he's smart. I think he seized up on the opportunity that's in front of him. I don't have a problem with him, you know, coming out and say that. And all the things that he was saying, for the most part, I liked, because it wasn't about – it wasn't – the way that he phrased it was about, I believe that I can help this team win. I believe I can help this team get to the playoffs. There is a lot of talented – guys in this farm system that believe that they could help this team win, get to the playoffs, and eventually go win a World Series, and that he is highly motivated to go and do that. That he loves the city, loves the fan base, and he's ready to go play. So from that standpoint, I like the fire. I like the intensity that he has and the confidence in himself that he feels like he could come up and be successful and help this team. Now, the 425 brings up something that I really, really liked and wanted to get to. Jake, it's another Ackley, it's another Zanino situation. Curtis, could you point out a couple other situations that the Mariners have had with failed top prospects for me?
Yeah, you got obviously Dustin Ackley, Mike Zanino, but Justin Smoke, Jesus Montero. I mean, those are just the guys in the last decade or so that have fallen short that had tremendous expectations placed upon them.
Okay, so Stacy, what have we been talking about past 20 years, Jerry DePoto, Scott Servais? We've been saying, give these guys a chance. They were not a part of those 20 years. They are different people, different mindset, and they are actually doing a pretty good job through this rebuilding process. And I would say the same thing for every Mariners fan that's out there who's going and having that fear. I think it's a legitimate fear. And obviously you've been burned by that.
Countless times.
But Jared Kelnick is not Dustin Ackley. He's not any one of these players.
He's also 21 years old.
It's unfair to put him in that box. Have we not seen young, talented players succeed here in Seattle?
We have.
Have we seen Alex Rodriguez? Have we seen King Griffey Jr. be successful in this town at a young age? Or is that just only them, Tatis Jr.? I mean, these guys are young and successful. Like, I see the other side of it. But I also want to point to the other side that it is possible that this kid could definitely be ready. And if you hold him in that high of esteem, and with all the ridiculous comments that Kevin Mather made in this Rotary press conference, there was no doubt about what talent this kid can be.
That's exactly right. I think that the thing I look at, though, Jake, is Jared Kelnick is 21 years old and did not take the college route. This is not a guy that has had a ton of experience. Look, I think that there probably is an aspect to wanting to make sure he's with your team when you're really making this push to compete starting in 2022. But if you're going to give DePoto and Servais the benefit of the doubt because they're part of a new regime, then why not give them a little bit of benefit of the doubt when it comes to maybe genuinely wanting to make sure that Kelnick is ready?
And that's a fair point. It's a very
because Tatis had more at-bats. He's young, but had more at-bats, significantly more. You had other guys that were young but took the college route. And Curtis, you pointed this out. Pointing to Griffey is probably a pretty fair example in terms of just numbers. Biggest difference, that was the late 80s.
Yeah, they were calling guys up almost as soon as they were drafted. You had like John Olerud. He never played minor league baseball. He went straight from college to the pros.
And it would feel unprecedented now. Though, Jake, the point that I love that you're making
is... Are players now just mentally soft? Like, are they not able to make that transition like they were?
It's just
then?
A huge investment
yeah,
now.
Yeah, the money that these guys are given out of the gate is greater than anything they were making in the 70s mm-hmm. and 80s.
And so you're looking at it thinking, I don't want to mess this up. What I like about your argument is pointing at A, Kelnick is not lacking for confidence. B, if you think he's a generational talent, maybe you treat him a bit differently than you might. Maybe you are a little bit unprecedented with him. I don't know if I was going numbers or letters, but C/3 is if he just balls out in spring training, maybe you do consider it. Maybe you do go for it because it's going to look pretty bad if come April 20th, April 22nd, April 23rd, he's brought up, because that will look pretty blatant. Like, what difference did those at-bats make?
Yeah, Kevin Mather put you in a position where you don't have a choice. Now, if Kelnick doesn't perform well and Shannon Dreyer has cautioned everybody, hey, look, Jared Kelnick, the first 2 weeks of spring training last year, it looked pretty darn good. But the last 2 weeks of spring training, when there were more major league type of arms that were starting to play, his production dropped off a little bit. And if that happens, I have zero problem with Jerry Dipoto, Scott Service, and the Mariners organization sitting here and saying, yeah, we want to make sure that Jared Kelnick has more time in his development process before we bring him up. No problems. But if he is playing at a high level and he is your best left outfielder at breaking camp, I believe that he should be with the team. With all that has been considered, I don't know how you couldn't construe it as service time manipulation thanks to Kevin Mather. Like we all knew that it was kind of the thought process there, but now that it's out in the open, I think there's too much at stake with an easy case for grievance. And also, when you talk about competing and wanting to build a solid culture and wanting to win games and give yourself the best chance to build the right way in 2021 and compete in 2022, I think playing the best player at left field is probably the best way to go.
All right, you're listening to Jake and Stacey. He's Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. It's 11:15-ish. That means it's time for Three Questions, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Question one, Seahawks in need of O-line help. So would you want them to take a flyer on disgruntled Titans first-rounder Isaiah Wilson?
Nope. No, I'm good. I don't want to have anything to do with any first-round draft busts that we feel like we could get the most out of them. I think we've had enough of those experiments, enough experiments with trying to convert guys from one position to the next. I just want somebody that has played solid, good football at a position that they know that they can play at a high level and that can translate very easily to the Seahawks. And look, those situations don't grow on trees. That's why somebody like Joe Tooney, Corey Linsley, they're going to come with a high price tag. That's why it's really hard, as the Seahawks know, to find a good offensive lineman in the draft with all their tries that they have gone with. So that to me, I don't want to deal with this, you know, feeling of, is this going to work out or not? Have big questions. I want to be able to have somebody that I feel very confident in what the Seahawks are seeing in this particular player and exactly how they're going to fit into Shane Waldron's offensive scheme.
Isaiah Wilson is young, was a rookie in 2020. Maybe he changes, grows, learns from this. Who knows what happens from this? Based only on 2020, that relationship between he and the team, it didn't look healthy. It looked like a hot mess from afar, and I don't want anything to do with that kind of relationship. I mean, hopefully for both of them, that changes or improves, or he gets a second chance, or the Titans move on, whatever it is that's happening there. Wish them the best, but no, I don't want any reclamation project. I don't want someone that's potentially going to bring in any toxicity. Like, you just want someone that will come in and help. That's what you want.
Number two.
A lot of questions about the futures of Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, and KJ Wright going around right now. So does finishing your career with the same organization you started with mean as much today as it used to?
It still means a lot because it's extremely hard to do. That's why it means so much. To see a player have an extended career past 10 years and still remain with the same club and the same team, that means that you are extremely valuable, and that means that you are also getting paid at a high level. And both of those things are really difficult to do with one team for a long period of time. And as you've seen in the past, relationships not deteriorating or wanting something else, wanting to go where the grass is greener. I think that is a great accomplishment for any player to have a long extended career with one franchise. That's why I believe it's so revered. So I believe that the premise of this question still means a lot. However, you are seeing more players have success with teams, with other teams, than you have in the past. Typically, when a team moves on that feeling in the past has been, well, that player's done. They're over the hill. They're no longer going to contribute at a high level.
I think it means more now than it used to because, like Jake said, it's so hard to do ever since clearly the start of free agency, which I think it's been good for the league. It's been obviously a more fair labor practice on the side of players, and so more fairness, always great when it comes to sports. That's how you keep a sport healthy. But it does mean that it is incredibly rare for a player to be with one team for the duration of his career. KJ Wright is really close to doing that with the Seattle Seahawks. I don't think Seahawks fans should harbor any resentment or anger whatsoever should he end his career elsewhere, being at least one example. It is so hard to stay with one team, in part because it feels like your team starts to value you less as you age, and the relationship becomes much more one-sided where maybe you feel like you're giving a lot and the team isn't reciprocating. So when that is a relationship that like ends well on a good note, I think it means more than it ever did before.
Number three.
Talked a lot about the Rams and the 49ers to start the offseason. Not so much about the Cardinals. So how warm should Cliff Kingsbury's seat be in Arizona heading into year three?
I believe red hot. At this stage for Cliff Kingsbury, you have 3 years to determine whether you can be a legitimate head coach in this league. And you've also been able to... This isn't like you're having to restructure the entire roster like you did in year one. Year three, you should be able to see the vision of the way you're building and constructing your roster come together. And if Cliff Kingsbury can't get it done in year three and can't get over that hump of and improve off of what they did last year, then I believe that you really have to wonder about Cliff Kingsbury's job here there in Arizona. I mean, he admitted this offseason, Stacey, I am going to hire somebody to manage the game, which is the job of the head coach, and I'm going to focus more on calling plays. So you admitted that you're a better offensive coordinator than you are an actual head coach. So I'm curious to see how that's going to play out.
Yeah, that is really interesting. I mean, one thing you can say to his credit is that they have improved at the very least. In 2019, his very first year, 5-10-1. Obviously, that was after a 3-13 season. Kyler Murray had a really promising rookie season, set a couple franchise records, improved to 8-8, finishing 3-4 in 2020. Oh, man. You have no choice but to go up from there with Murray and Hopkins. You need to figure out a way to make that work. They individually put up some good numbers, particularly Hopkins. You need to make that pay off. You got to steal in that trade, and you need to make the most of it with your young quarterback. I don't know if he's going to have the hottest seat in the NFL, but it's getting pretty warm. All right, we have so much to cover today. Hopefully we'll get to some fun news. I think we will. I think we've got some good stuff down here. We have, MLB Network insider John Morosi joining us, obviously, to talk about Kelnick today. Going to be a really fun show. Before we get to any of that, we're going to bring on Mike Salk, talk a little bit about Russell Wilson, some of these rumors that are swirling about the price it would cost to trade him. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Mike Self joining us now, brought to you by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer. Hello, Mike.
Hello, guys.
So there's some Michael Silver sound going around in which he says that the Seahawks are reportedly going to be listening to potentially some trade deals for Russell Wilson. The starting point would be 3 first-round picks. And in this conversation, he's like, oh, it'll probably be fixed. It's probably not a big deal. Obviously, we know that anytime reports or stories get out, it's for a reason.
Yeah, I got to tell you, 3 first-round picks? If I were John Schneider, I would laugh at that offer. Jamal Adams, to get Jamal Adams, who was on last year of his deal, right? I guess you still have this year, but you've got to negotiate with him this year. So he had 2 years left. For a safety, you had to give up 2 firsts and a third, plus Bradley McDougal.
So for one more first.
For one more first, you can have a premier elite franchise quarterback for the next however many years. Get out of town. There's not a chance I would consider 3 first-round picks for Russell Wilson. If you offered that to me, I would laugh you out of the building. Now, if I were guaranteed that all of those picks were going to be top 5 in the draft, okay, maybe I start to have a conversation. I mean, not all first-round picks are created equal, but unless you're telling me I'm getting Trevor Lawrence and at least two more first-round picks, I don't even see why I'm having a conversation about this. Get out of my office.
Think about all the trade downs that John and the
get out of my office.
Think about all the volume.
Well, they're not in there because of COVID.
All of those
COVID protocols.
Yeah, exactly.
This is over the phone.
Get
it's virtual.
Off my Zoom call. Hang up now. Put yourself on mute. Do not even don't bring me any of that noise until you are finding a way for me to specifically replace my franchise quarterback with another elite franchise quarterback who's cheaper. Because other than that, I don't even want to hear it.
Mike,
just get out of my office.
I'm telling you right now, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, because we've seen it before in the weeks preceding this conversation we're having right now, and I'm seeing it right now that people are saying take the deal.
Three first-round picks? What? Where are the first-round picks coming from?
Let's say that they're like middle or upper rounds.
No.
Why not?
You just did that for Jamal Adams.
Okay.
The difference between Russell Wilson and Jamal Adams is the difference between, like, Manute Bol's height and yours, Stacey.
Okay, wow.
They're not
personal.
Connected.
All right.
They're not.
I don't know what I did.
But this is just wrong.
Now, Salk,
this is wrong.
Now, Silver, as he's pointing out, hey, John Schneider, he always is listening.
Sure.
He's always listening. And he generally always is. That's his nature mm-hmm. as a GM. Do you think this is planting a seed to everybody else out there in the NFL? Or is this a clapback by John Schneider, kind of putting it out there as a dig, because this is clearly Michael Silver. Because Michael Silver also went on with Dan Patrick,
right,
said that in his opinion, John Schneider is the very best
GM.
It's
so hard, Jake. This may be nothing more than other GMs trying to pry Russell loose, and so they're throwing this out there, and it's not coming from the Seahawks. I mean, there's so much misinformation and use of the media. If I were John Schneider and I was really trying to send a message to Russ, I'd say it starts at one first-round pick, and that's how much I think of you. But I don't think he's doing that. Like, yeah, I think John is always willing to listen. Sure. And then laugh at you when you offer three first-round picks for Russell Wilson, which is exactly what he should do.
Yeah.
I'm going to switch gears a little bit. Jared Kelnick in an interview with Bob Nightingale for USA Today. No surprise here, says that he's the victim of service time manipulation. And why wouldn't you, given that former team president and CEO Kevin mm-hmm. Mather came out and used the phrase, we aren't going to start that service time clock.
Yeah, so. I think that he has not been the victim of service time manipulation yet. When I read the comments from Mather, I don't believe there was any service time manipulation last year. I don't know why you would start a clock on anybody.
Well, they were going to. I mean, they offered him a deal.
That perhaps they would have at some point during the season brought him up, but they didn't have any at-bats between then. There were no at-bats taken. So I don't know that I could say there was any service time manipulation last year. Now, the one that bothers me is he'd be up in late April of this year. That, if it were true, could absolutely be construed as service time manipulation. And to say it out loud to me, like, what are you going to say right now that makes him better in late April as opposed to early April?
Correct.
Like, I understand.
172 days makes him.
Well, it's not even 172 days. It's like 30 days.
Yeah, yeah. 30... No. I'm saying it would. You would not reach the threshold.
Oh, the threat. Yeah, but dude, 30 days. Like, whatever. You're going to get a couple at bats. I think that there are some legit arguments to be made as for why they didn't bring him up to begin the year last year. I got no issues with that. Here's the last part about service time manipulation. I don't have a problem with it. Like, I'm not mad about service time manipulation. You're not supposed to say it out loud if you're the team because you're giving the union fodder, but that's the gig. That's the game that was worked out. That's the way the CBA functions. They manipulate service time. That's how it goes. Like, I'm sorry that the players don't like that, but if the players didn't like that, they could have fought harder for that in the last CBA instead of making sure they all had their own private seats on a bus. I mean, like, this is the way that teams play the game in order to give themselves the best shot to win for as long as possible and to have a player under their control for as long as they need in the best years of his career. That's just smart. That's being a smart GM and a smart baseball team. You're not supposed to say it out loud. That's not very smart.
Right.
You just think it.
But well, but doing it as a practice, I mean, that's how the game has been played forever by almost 30 of 30 teams.
No, I definitely agree. And I do think that it's important to mention that the difference between when he would have been brought up last year, mm-hmm. which 60 games, I don't really care. I don't care if you don't start that clock now. It's what are you doing heading into this year?
Right.
And are you holding back this player this year,
yep, agreed,
based off that service time manipulation? And Kelnick is a savvy dude. He is taking advantage of the opportunity that's in front of him right now and the fanfare and knowing that everybody's going to be on his side on this
one. And I'm sure the union isn't doesn't mind his agent. His agent's name is Bodie. Of course it is. Of course his agent's name is
Bodie.
What's
wrong with Bodie? That's
Jake's son's name.
Yeah. I know. I'm aware of the waters I'm treading into.
Face.
What's wrong with the name
so
Bodie?
So first you call me short, just wrongfully, and then you say you don't like the name Bodie.
You got something for me, Mike? You got something for me?
What are you going to say to Curtis's face?
Here we go.
Give it a minute. It's coming. It's coming.
Okay.
Mike's going to drop it in the last like 10
wow.
seconds.
Wow. That's right.
Sorry.
And you know what? I hate
it's only
glasses.
For the actual
get
hosts of this show. I don't bother with lowly producers.
Well, I don't bother with people who aren't on daily radio. So there we go.
Also, Mike, you're talking right now to the Mariners virtual media or
trivia
virtual
game winner. Yeah.
Trivia game
you know what?
Winner.
I'm sorry that I take it back. It's really
yeah,
worthy.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay. Sorry about that.
But we get sidetracked. But I think that Kelnick's looking at this opportunity and it really in the article, I love what he said.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he was talking about more as a competitor that, hey, I've worked extremely hard. I'm ready. I'm ready to go. I want to win a championship. I want to get this team to the playoffs. And I feel like my talent and the guys that are in this farm system are being wasted sure. when I have been told that this culture is about trying to win.
Yeah, he's got attitude. I mean, and that's a good thing for him long term. I don't know that anything was going to I don't know that it changes a culture for him to be up last year.
Right.
It might change a culture for him to start the year this year. I mean, that could actually have some legitimate effect on your culture. I don't know that bringing him up in a lost season where he'd have been the only guy here.
Fully agree.
I just don't see how that's a benefit to anybody, really, including Kelnick, who hasn't had a ton of reps in the major leagues. Once you start that clock on a guy that you think could be as good as him, you don't want him to suffer in the major leagues. You don't want him to come up, go 0-30 and go into one of these awful slugs. This is what the Mariners have been accused of forever. It's ridiculous to me that we're going to now get mad at them the other way. For not bringing guys up. We got mad at them for rushing Brandon Morrow, for rushing Mike Zunino, and there's a whole Curtis, jokes aside, we'll probably think of five other guys that they rushed to the major leagues without giving them enough at bats in the minors because they were so desperate to please their fan base and get somebody exciting and were accused of putting business ahead of baseball. Keeping Jared Kelnick in the minors until he's ready to go 100%, until he's fully cooked. That's not bad baseball. That's good baseball. That's good development. You have to do what's best for the development of Jared Kelnick.
Last question here for us. So I was reading a bit more about Tiger Woods' accident this morning. Woods, thankfully, is okay now. Sounds like he's through surgery for some serious injuries to his right leg. So obviously he's now on a road to recovery there. But the LA County Sheriff spoke with CNN. And in an article that came out this morning, he said it was nothing short of a miracle that Woods was alive. We've seen accidents with far less damage that are fatalities. Mm-hmm. And I think that reading that this morning, I was like, wow, we were pretty close to losing a sports legend.
Yeah. And how crazy would it have been to have seen him and Kobe Bryant almost not exactly a year, but 13 months apart, essentially in accidents like that would have just been I mean, as bad as it was with Kobe to then see it again with Tiger Woods. I'm curious to see what else obviously comes out of this and as more information comes out over these next few days. But, you know, it's thankfully we avoided a tragedy. It's hard to imagine that Tiger's going to play golf again, but I think that many of us thought he wasn't going to play golf again a few years ago. Maybe this leads to the next phase of his career as you know, Ryder Cup captain, continuing in that role and doing some other things. But yeah, I mean, it was pretty surprising yesterday to hear that. I mean, look, anybody can get in a car accident. I mean, like it's not like a celebrity is immune from being in a car accident. Thankfully, it sounds like his car was able to withstand it and. You know, it's a Genesis.
I mean, barely.
Those Genesis look pretty good all of a sudden. I mean, that's a really nice thing that he was in a car that was safe enough to withstand it and that he was lucky enough. But,
well, and I got to tell you,
no one's exempt.
Yeah. The other thing that really stood out to me that I was happy to hear about, and again, as you said, we'll find out more and more as the days go on, but immediately what comes to mind is fearful of, oh no, please don't have slip back into addiction and things like that when he came out on
well,
the
we
other
haven't
side
heard anything
of it.
About
we
that.
Haven't. We
but,
know,
but
that's where everybody's mind goes.
Right. That's where everybody's
especially
mind goes.
Especially because if you watched on Sunday, he didn't look great at the Genesis Open where mm-hmm. he just He just didn't look great. And there were a lot of comments online that, oh, it looks like Tiger's been on a bender or something like that. No one knows. I mean, there's no evidence of anything.
You don't
like
have
that.
Toxicology reports yet, but the sheriff's department has already said alcohol not a factor.
Good.
I hope so.
And hopefully that we find out that there was no other drug or anything else involved. And if not, you say, gosh, it's amazing how this really can happen to anybody and how quickly things can change in someone's life.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
See you guys.
Trade rumors, controversial interviews, it has to stop, you guys. Nick Wright has a solution for the Seahawks and Russell Wilson to solve that little issue they're having, but something big could be standing in the way. It's not salary cap. It's not a lack of draft picks. So what is it? We'll tell you next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. He's Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. There was an interview that Michael Silver did with NFL Network. He said that it would take minimum 3 first-round picks to even have a conversation about trading Russell Wilson. The fact that that report is even out there, though, has caused some to feel like maybe either the Seahawks are putting this out there, the rumor is just out there. But either way, to Nick Wright, a separate sports personality, it is clear that the Seahawks aren't intent on shutting the rumors down. Now, for the record, the Seahawks, meaning Pete Carroll and John Schneider, aren't usually outspoken about any of this stuff. They never normally come out and speak to reporters and take a public stance on much of anything. And John Schneider has been open about willing to always have a conversation about any player. So let's first go to Nick Wright. Now, he says that, the Packers GM said they wouldn't trade for Aaron Rodgers. He wants to hear some of that. And cut number 6, though, Nick Wright, furious the Seahawks haven't publicly said they're committed.
I don't know. And that is now the story. The story is not that a third of the league wants Russell Wilson. Listen, let me call up Jay Glazer real quick. Jay, how many teams would trade for Russell Wilson? Oh, 27? 28? Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. Jay Glazer just told me. 28 teams. There's 28 teams that would trade for Russell Wilson right now. So it's just a third is called, a third will call, and another 6th are considering it. Brandon, why hasn't Seattle come out and said something?
Now let's go ahead to go to what Brandon said. Cut number 8, this is Brandon Marshall explaining why he thinks the Seahawks have not committed to Russ.
Why? It's because they don't believe in the style of football that Russell Wilson wants to play. And they want him to play hero ball. What is hero ball? Well, look, most games are decided by 3 to 6 points in the National Football League. So they think that if they play good defense and they can play that style of offense, Russell Wilson will pull it out in the end. That's what they think they will happen. Russell Wilson, 2-minute drill, go win the game with a minute left on the clock. And I don't think Russ wants to play that way anymore.
Now, Jake, what if what's getting in the way of the Seahawks fully committing to Russell Wilson or from Russell Wilson to stop kind of talking about his own dissatisfaction with protection? It's not a lack of money to spend on offensive linemen. It's not draft picks to spend on offensive linemen. What if, Jake, it's something like ego or stubbornness between these two parties?
Well, I would say that it's definitely, it has a large part to do with that. I think it's the ego of Russell Wilson looking at what has happened or transpired over the last 5 years and critically looking at it and saying, hey, I want our group to be better. I want to be able to stop treading water, and I want to get over the hump just like Pete and John do, right? And get to the next step and get to that next step that we all want, which is them to get to an NFC Championship game, which is to get back to a Super Bowl. They all want that, and it's what they're all three of them, it's what their world revolves around every single day. And so why is that internal war happening? It's because they're not on the same page.
About how to do it?
Yeah. I mean, that to me is the only thing that I can look at and say, why are these three guys hyper-competitive? They have so many commonalities between the three of them, and they all have the same desire. It's because you have a different view of how to get there. And to me, Russell Wilson is not a normal player. He is a superstar. He is their $35 million quarterback. He isn't just going to sit back and accept anything and everything that Pete Carroll and John Schneider decide to do. Very clearly, obviously, him going to the media and saying what he said, I think Wilson has also made it crystal clear that he's not just going to accept the status quo, during his prime years. And I think that that part of it is really important, because now you have conversations that go on internally between the three of them. And how are we going to get to the next step? How are we going to stop treading water? And there are a lot of other things that John Schneider and Pete Carroll have to worry about. Carlos Dunlap extension. What are you going to do with Bobby Wagner's contract? How are you going to work that out? Jamal Adams, Jaron Reed, Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf coming down the pipe. They've got a bunch of other things that they have to solve in order to construct a roster. That's why I don't envy either one of those two guys as they try to build a championship roster every single year. Not easy. But at the same time, you have made very clearly your investment, and you have also said, I think, at least I would think by just the contract alone, that you believe that Russell Wilson is the number one factor to help get you to a Super Bowl. And when you look at what has happened with this discussion, what I do believe has happened is, from an ego standpoint, and Nick Wright pointing this out, that look, when Aaron Rodgers kind of threw it out there at the end of the season, hey, I don't know where my future is going to be, this, that, and the other. The Packers GM and Matt LaFleur, they made it very crystal clear that, look, he's not going anywhere here in cut number 7.
Matt LaFleur was put in a similar situation more directly by Aaron Rodgers. And by the way, the GM, Brian Gutekunst, was asked about Aaron Rodgers around that same time, about would he possibly be traded, and his quote was, of course not. Brandon, the fact that we haven't heard that yet does lead me to believe that when they are getting these phone calls from a third of the league, there is at least one ear that is a little intrigued by it.
So the thing that worries me is that I don't personally believe, and as you stated before, Pete Carroll and John Schneider, they don't talk to the public just to talk to them. They rarely do that. And I don't believe in this situation that Pete Carroll, John Schneider need to go out of their way to go on an interview and to publicly say Russell Wilson isn't going to go anywhere, because there's no real need for it. They know that he's not going to go anywhere. And Russell Wilson's the one that started this conversation, right, in terms of, hey, I don't know what the Seahawks want to do. I don't know what's going to happen. This is X, Y, and Z of what I'm hoping for that happens. And John Schneider, Pete Carroll are not going to have a scheduled press conference in quite some time. So it might be a long time that we hear from them. Mm-hmm. But to me, the issue that I have is now Mike Silver is going around, who is very clearly getting this information from John Schneider. It's not anybody else. It's not Mike Silver speculating on this. He's getting this from John Schneider, in my opinion, that, hey, the conversation starts at 3 first round picks, and that's when they will listen, and that's what they'll, you know, now it becomes an actual conversation. To me, I don't see how that is a positive. I don't see how that's a positive in the dynamic of the conversation for all sides here. When they could clearly say, hey, Mike Silver, like, we're having people that are coming out and asking us about a trade, a third of the league, we're just not interested. And I think that's an interesting crossroads into this conversation.
All right, we're getting back to this conversation at 12:45 with one current Seahawk that said he's not buying the Russell Wilson trade rumors. Also, I've got some questions here from the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. But first, we're going to veer. We're going to get off the track here with Seahawks. We're going to get back on the track with Mariners, because we had some more developments this morning. Fallout from Kevin Mather's comments. Jared Kelnick doing an interview with USA Today talking about service time manipulation. We're going to talk about his comments as well as where the Mariners go from here with Fox Sports and MLB Network insider John Morosi. That's next.